Okay. So my I will tell you about some relatively recent results on properties of very very disordered superconductors of usual kind. I mean nothing like complicated order parameter and so on, just S-wave superconductor, but with very strong disorder. Something like pointer. It's a pointer. Excellent. Of course, I will start with description of some experiments which demonstrate that we indeed have some unusual states of this superconductive material at low temperatures. And actually, it will be two different unusual states, one insulating and another superconducting. Why they're unusual, I will just show in the next few minutes. Then I will turn to some theoretical description on how we can understand the existence of these states. And finally, I will show you that this description leads naturally to the formulation of somewhat new stage for the study of phase transition between these two states, superconductive one and insulating one. However, I will not discuss the phase transition itself. That will be a subject of another talk, which you will have a chance to hear tomorrow. So, brief introduction. Start with a rather old data on amorphous indium oxide. First paper is rather well known by Shahar and Avadiahu. This plot demonstrates a direct transition from superconductive state of this material here. These points show the value of transition temperature to the insulating state, which is characterized by a hard gap. Important point is that in the insulator, resistivity goes as usual, simple exponential formula, Reynolds formula, not like a variable range hopping, which is usually exist in an insulator. And one particular example of this behavior is shown here from the next paper. You see that this is just 1 over T dependence of the logarithm of resistance. We were quite large activation energy, much larger than the scale of superconductive gap for the same material. Then at higher temperature, this activation behavior crosses over to the variable range hopping, like Motlow. Whereas at low temperature, it is a pure activation. So there is a question why. Why there is a hard gap? Now, the same kind of behavior was recently found near transition from superconductive to insulator state in the material which is very, very close to becoming superconducting. Here, in this nearly critical indium oxide, it was also Arrhenius behavior, but with a smaller gap. The same.
It's very small time. Are you talking about 2 times in the distance?
Not of course. This activation gap was measured here on this piece.
Here.
The same behavior was also demonstrated on another material of the same kind. Again, near critical. Samples with even much smaller activation gap, but again, qualitatively behavior is the same. Well, last example is that before, this is magnetic field controlled superconductive insulator transition. And again, here in the region of very large resistance at low temperatures, here, for example, we found activation-like behavior with a maximum gap about 1 Kelvin. Now, we need to distill two different issues. Resistivity as a function of temperature phi in an insulating state. This is the subject from which I started. And the same behavior near the transition to superconductor, like here, for example, because it is quite, seems to be reasonable to expect that near the transition, charge transport is dominated by pairs, not by single electrons. So we have actually two questions. One is why single we have a hard gap fine insulator, and another question, why we have hard gap close to the transition. The answer to one of these questions I will provide. So that's the main conclusion from what I've already shown. Next story is concerns relatively recent experimental data on local tunneling probes in on superconductive side of the same material. This is again amorphous indium oxide. Well, this mainly experiment done on Grenoble with the samples produced by Dan Shahar group. So what you see here is the STM tunneling conductance, for example, on this plot. As function of voltage and at different temperatures. From like 3 or 5 times above the transition temperature, these lines, down to 50 millik, much below transition temperature. Now, transition temperature was found simultaneously by the resistivity measurement in the same sample. So the most important piece of information here is this red line, which shows you tunneling conductance at the transition temperature, right at the transition. You see that almost full gap is there, which is very strange from the point of view of usual superconductor. There you could expect just maybe some small correction to the density of states. Here we definitely see that the origin of the gap in a single electron spectrum and the origin of superconductivity are some different phenomena. But then what happens when we go below this, in temperature, below this red line? The width of the gap is the same, doesn't change. But new feature is that Hyperion peaks appear and grow. Not everywhere, because when they scan along the surface, at some locations the picture is like this, and 3D plot of the same data is here. But on other locations, the same gap is there, but no coherent peak appear at any temperature. Yes, yes. That's about the same kind of data you see with peaks here and without peaks. You see that in all cases the scale of this gap is much wider than the transition temperature. It is a, with respect to BCS ratio, it's factor 3 or 4 larger, the width of the gap. But peaks are, some they exist, some they are not. So from this data, we have a second, the second conclusion, that on superconductive side of the same material, spectral gap in a single electron spectral gap appears much before superconductivity starts in. But the coherence peaks appear together with vanishing of resistance. Now, what kind of materials are relevant here? Apart from indium oxide and titanium nitride, similar behavior, at least in some experiments, were found on ultra-thin beryllium films and on a very strongly disordered niobium nitrogen.
Also thin.
They are not very thin. It's these films, I think, like indium oxide, some tenths of nanometers.
You can add to the list of aluminum, gallium.
Look. Yes. What I want to stress that I certainly want to discuss only amorphous materials, not nothing to do with any granular structure. The general feature of these materials is that the carrier density is relatively low in all of them. It is order of magnitude below normal metals, or even more than order of magnitude. Okay, what about theory? Generally, we know that for a long time exist three different pictures on how superconductivity is suppressed by localization. These three are listed on this slide. They, of course, have different areas of application. For example, in a granular or systems or some specially prepared Josephson arrays, the relevant description is the competition between Coulomb interaction and Josephson tunneling, which is called bosonic mechanism. Then in a, thin films of disordered metals, very frequently this fermionic mechanism developed in much details by Finkelstein was known. But here we, in this special class of materials, we deal with something else. Both bosonic and fermionic mechanisms are not applicable here. And for the reason which I demonstrated just, for example, by this spectral tunneling, local tunneling data, which I showed just before. So we will try to use the third known approach, where it was initiated also long ago in this series of papers, where the competition between Cooper pairing and localization was studied without any account for Coulomb interaction, just competition between localization of single electron eigenstates and pairing. So we'll try to look what comes out from this approach. So this is our model. H naught is a Hamiltonian for electrons in a random potential. Then there is some local Cooper pairing. And we use the approach started by Mai and Li long ago just to use the eigenfunction representation for this Hamiltonian. This psi are exact eigenfunction of single electron problem. We assume that Fermi energy is close to the mobility H or even in the region of relatively weakly localized states. The conclusion obtained by Mai and Li in this problem was that superconductive state transforms to an insulating one roughly under the condition that typical level spacing inside localization volume, which is denoted here by this delta L, is about the transition temperature on the superconductive side. Actually, we found that superconductive state survives quite far in this region. It is more stable when it was thought before. And the point is that at this time, long ago, the fractal nature of wave functions near Anderson mobility H was almost unknown, and it is important here. So we take into account this fractality. And the first question, how to develop the simplest VCS-like approach for the problem where original single electron wave functions are critical or nearly critical in the sense of Anderson mobility H. We start from well-known gap equation here, where this kernel k is determined by the set of eigenfunctions and eigenvalues. This is a classical formula. Now, next classical step would be to assume that order parameter as a function of position in the space can be approximated as a constant. Then we would get the Anderson theorem. And in this case, when the Fermi level is close to mobility H, that assumption would be totally incorrect. Actually, we will find that order parameter is strongly inhomogeneous and very strongly fluctuating. So instead of doing this approximation, we will do a different thing. We will average not a kernel K, but rather the Cooper propagator, defined like this. Of course, I have no time to explain any details, but the outcome of calculation, which was rather simple, is that what we need to solve in order to find the transition temperature is this kind of equation for the eigenfunction phi of psi, which looks like a usual BCS equation for transition temperature, apart from the fact that here I have some function instead of a constant. If this m would be a constant, it would be a usual equation.
But why do you care what you get? Why? Some function.
Yes. Yes. Because the singularity, we were looking for the phase transition. Yeah, we were the Couperon propagator becomes singular, right? And this is just this propagator. So instead of this is like instead of averaging the Hamiltonian, you average the Green function, which is more reasonable. In a simple case, it is the same. But in a more complicated case, you need to average just the quantity which you are interested in. And this quantity is a Couperon propagator, which is supposed to diverge at the transition. We will find a global transition temperature. Global transition temperature, which is global and unique. Of course, what it corresponds to is rather the local fluctuations of density of states or the local fluctuations of coupling constant. But then you can ask the question, suppose I have this inhomogeneous superconductor with fluctuating density of states, but still at some point I expect the real thermodynamic transition at some temperature. So how to find this temperature? Yes, Fermi wavelength and mean free path are of the same order of magnitude. We are at very strong disorder. Now, localization length is long. It is much longer than Fermi wavelength. So this is what I mean by weakly localized states. So we are close to the mobility age.
But I wanted to say that why not inverse quantity? You can average inverse quantity, then it goes to zero transition. So what's the logic?
Boris, sorry, let's postpone. Otherwise, I will not move anywhere. So, the function m, which enter my equation, this function is a correlation of intensities of two wave functions, psi I squared, psi j squared, at a fixed energy difference between them. So, we take all products of this kind and average at fixed energy difference. For wave functions which are close to Anderson mobility H, this is known to be a power law. This power law, the exponent directly related to the fractal exponent of a single wave function. The relation between this d2, this d2 and this are the same. And by mistake, it was a large uppercase here. So for a single wave function, you can define inverse participation ratio integral, mi, and then consider scaling of this quantity with length or with localization length. The scaling of this quantity is anomalous. Instead of dimensionality of space, say free, here there is some fractional exponent, d2, and for three-dimensional case, it is close to 1.3, non-numerically. Then, it was a John Chalker hypothesis, which was found to be totally correct, that this exponent also enter into the function m, which is correlation of two different eigenfunctions. And the relation is here. So there is a again, for three-dimensional Anderson model, what we get is this gamma close to 0.6. And now, you see the result. What should we be? Sorry. So this is a result of a numerical computation of this correlation function for different sizes, cubes of this 3D Anderson model. And the slope here is just this 0.6. And then this is rated different levels depending on the scale of size. These green dots correspond to the Fermi energy in the region of localized state, and I will comment about it a little late. So this is our equation again, and immediately you see that transition temperature which comes out have very unusual dependence of coupling constant. Instead of exponential dependence of BCS theory, here it is a power law, which is determined by the fractal exponent. On what?
The kernel M would depend on space in principle.
What do you mean on space?
Well, if you write down the psi squared, that depends on space where you are. So how does kernel exactly look? Canonic length is space or something?
It is defined as an average at a fixed omega. Ah, okay. The answer is the following. What I'm doing here is actually a kind of modified mean field approximation. Then I should check how good or how bad it is. It was done and was found that the corresponding Ginzburg number for this description is of order 1. So the conclusion is that transition temperature, which I will find this way, can be off by factor 2 or 3, but parametric dependence is correct.
And with
no Coulomb, not at all. The reason why it might happen that it can be neglected, I would prefer to discuss it at the end. So we have here nothing apart from Anderson model plus weak local Cooper attraction. Good. So first, one thing which you see from this formula is, for example, that if you have some given small value of dimensionless attraction lambda, then for this strange superconductor, the transition temperature might be even higher than normal the same lambda. If this can... Now, okay, that I will skip. That I also will skip and go to the situation when Fermi energy is a little bit in the localized band. Now we have two effects. One effect is very similar to what I described already, this development of superconductive pairing. But the another effect is the local pairing of electrons, which are sitting in the same localized orbital. It exists only when these single electron wave functions are localized and have some effectively finite volume. The simplest, most simple example of the same phenomenon was discussed by Matveev and Larkin for ultra-small metallic grains we were Cooper pairing. Ultra-small means that level spacing in this grain is larger than superconductive gap in the bulk of the same material. Then what we found is that although there is no super many-body correlations in this system, almost no, there is just perturbative effect of attraction. Still, this effect leads to a pairing parity gap, which makes a difference between grains which contain even or odd number of electrons. This parity gap scales roughly like level spacing divided by this logarithm. We will apply the same idea for our situation of bulk material with localized single electron wave functions. Here, the corresponding energy scale will be given by the coupling constant J multiplied by this matrix element, which is just inverse participation ratio. Again, remember what already was said, that if we can wait, that this matrix element scales as anomalous power D2 of the localization length. Localization length itself is a function of proximity to the mobility age. Combining them together, we find that this typical pairing gap scales as proximity to the mobility age. EC is mobility age, EF is the Fermi energy, and then all that is in the power nu, which is close to one, and this fractal dimension. So this is the energy which I need to pay in order to add extra electron or to remove electron destroying the pair. So I want to interpret this typical value of this delta P as a hard gap which enters the conductivity in the insulating state. Suppose I don't have any long range coherence and the only effect of interaction is this local pairing. Then it will lead to activation energy, which depends on the disorder. Here sigma is some conductivity at high temperature. This is a critical value. And then it is a power law which with this fractal exponent. Here is a fit to the experimental data, which does not prove anything apart from the fact that this is not self-contradictory. It is not a completely trivial statement because we can consider it with a similar plot in the original paper of Dunn and Zwie. There we try to fit the same data just with level spacing. So the difference is that here there is a normal power free without any fractality. You see that this is off by two orders of magnitude. So the change of exponent with the use of this fractality makes a big difference. Now, let's consider again the superconductive pairing. Pseudo gap is already there. Now we need to try to solve the equation for the gap. the same equation, more or less, but now this correlation function M should be specific for weakly localized states. And here we come again to this plot. Green dots show numerics for the same correlation function in the region of localized eigenstates. Surprisingly, it goes very similar to this critical one. It would not be the case for one-dimensional system. In one-dimensional system, it would be just saturation in the region of localized state. But in 2D or in 3D, there is some logarithm. For example, in 3D system, in the asymptotic behavior at low frequencies is like this. And this log squared is of the same origin as log and which enters mod law for frequency conductivity on localized states. So roughly outcome is that correlations between different eigenstates are enhanced with respect to naive expectations. And this is why we can find still some transition temperature, even in the region when typical level spacing is rather large. This is this plot shows us evolution of transition temperature, red line, and local gap, black line, as function of position of Fermi energy. When we move this blue vertical line shows the position of mobility H. We move with E here into more and more localized state. And we see that there is a region, quite considerable region, where local gap is much larger than transition temperature. Still, transition temperature exists, non-zero. That means that now we can look for some effective Hamiltonian for these well-developed pseudo-gap superconductive state, where local gap is much larger than TC. Naturally, this Hamiltonian is well known. It is a Anderson pseudo-spin Hamiltonian here with S plus S minus SZ components of the spin 1/2 operator, which is creation of localized pair, annihilation of this pair, and then SZ counts the number of these pairs. And under the condition of strong pseudo-gap, the single electron occupation of states can be neglected because we need to pay much larger gap energy. Low-lying states are described by this Hamiltonian. So this is SZ spins in a random field in Z direction. This psi are just single electron eigenvalues, which are distributed in a wide band. And then there is a XY coupling here. This is, good. So I came to the formulation of the problem, which might describe the transition between pseudo-gap superconductor and insulator, the gap. And the Hamiltonian is this. One question which should be understood with this Hamiltonian is how it happens that on insulating side means there is no any average of this X, SX, SY components. From experimental data for transport near the transition, we learned that resistivity is still simply activated, even in this nearly critical region. So why? The answer should be found, probably, we think, with this Hamiltonian. And this is now conclusion. What I told you is that pairing on this nearly critical eigenstates provides inhomogeneous superconductive state with relatively high TC, then pairing of electrons on a weakly localized states produce local gap and activation behavior in resistivity. Then we increase disorder starting from superconductive side. First we find superconductor with a strong pseudo gap, and then it evolves into insulator. And for the theory of how it happens, the transition between these two states, you will can hear tomorrow in the Lefyov talk. Thanks.
How does one physically understand a larger TC in a fractal superconducting state? I mean, is this just superconducting pairing, or is it actually you're claiming that there is going to be coherent superconductivity along
yes.
the fractal?
Yes, it is a coherent superconductive state, but this coherence with superconductive state does not fill the whole volume. It populates a small fraction of the whole volume of this 3D system. So if you calculate, for example, a superfluid density, it will be small. It will be much smaller than a normal superconductor. It is a roughly speaking, you can imagine something intermediate between usual disordered superconductor, where you have order parameter everywhere of the same order of magnitude, and some network of islands connected by junctions, where you know that between islands there is nothing, just zero. And here it is something intermediate, when the system doesn't contain any islands, but the amplitude of order parameter fluctuates very strongly. What do you mean, sensitive? But it is not one-dimensional line. It is rather a spaghetti.
Well, every spaghetti is an infinite cluster of percolation theory. I mean, infinite cluster of percolation theory, that is one-dimensional things, and they are very sensitive fluctuations.
But these fluctuations are already taken into account.
But why?
Probably compared to what? Look, this order parameter develops in a small volume fraction of the whole system. If you smear it out, you will get a usual disordered superconductor with a small dimensionless coupling constant. You concentrate all this interaction in a small fraction of the volume. This is why you get a higher TC.
If I understand correctly, then I think you would get, if you would measure the superfluid density in a typical experiment using low frequency conductivity experiments, you would get a small superfluid density, and that's just for the region that you're averaging over the volume, the whole volume of the sample. But I think still, if you were to define something like a phase stiffness, that would probably still be quite large, at least as compared to what you would measure from the superfluid density, because you still have, you know, if you think of it in the usual sense, defining a twist in phase, the order parameter across the whole sample, the superconductivity is living on these filaments. Filamentary superconductivity, as I understand it, and that could be quite large still. That phase stiffness, compared to what I don't know, but I guess compared to the macroscopically measured superfluid density, is that reasonable? I don't know if you.
Well,
drift.
I'm not sure I understand the question, but let me answer that. Superfluid density or a stiffness. The same for this system, which we found is just of the same order of magnitude as what was found much before by Kapitulnik, Kotler, the same order of magnitude estimate. So for this stiffness, all these effects of fractality appears to be non-important. But if you compare the stiffness with the same quantity for far from localization age, just in the disordered metal, then you find that it is indeed very strongly suppressed.
To explain why you can neglect electron-electron interaction in this particular case, where electrons are almost localized.
The answer is a little bit strange. I mentioned that all that is known for materials with a low electron density, low density of conducting electrons. On the other hand, these materials, even with a much lower density of conducting electrons, just on the insulating side, they're known to have a quite large dielectric constant. Since distance between conducting electrons is much larger than measured interatomic distance, it makes sense to consider the dielectric constant of this matrix, of insulating matrix, and include it into the Coulomb interaction between conducting electrons. The result is that if you estimate the effective Coulomb potential, which acts between these conducting electrons, it appears to be weak. There is normally, in a disordered metal, you have a Coulomb amplitude of order 1. So all effects like enhanced repulsion in the Cooper channel, like what Finkelstein was deriving, they're found under the condition of strong Coulomb interaction. Here, this screening is relatively weak, and this is why we think it qualitatively correct picture can be obtained without this interaction at all. There is a strong, not screening, but just suppression of Coulomb by a large polarization of metal. Yes.
So I have this question. So Anderson localization is sort of single particle physics. So should I think about electrons being localized first, or Cooper pairs being localized by disorder? So if it makes sense. So. Let's say if you formulate your Richardson model, you have an index, a discrete index, which presumably corresponds to site localized in space. So there's, in fact, two possibilities. I could imagine electrons basically pairing up on neighboring sort of localized side or Cooper pair forming on a single side. So which picture is actually right in this regime?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
So I'm just asking. So, for instance, you're building your model based on the wave functions, localized wave functions, right?
Yes, single electron wave.
Electron wave functions. But I could, for instance, I could imagine a fictitious experiment when I first include, let's say, attraction between electrons, and then I turn on disorder potential, and so I could work in terms of localized Cooper pairs.
The order, it depends, I think, which interaction is weak and which is strong. In our model, the attraction between electrons is weak, whereas disorder is very strong. So this is why we start from the single electron picture and then add interaction. Otherwise, one could consider something like negative U-Hubbard model with a strong local attraction. It was done, for example, numerically by Shapelansky and somebody else. And the result is different. Depending on what is, which interaction is stronger, say attraction or a disorder, the, even the qualitative outcome is different.
But isn't the parameter coherence length basically versus the localization length? Isn't it the size of the Cooper pair versus some sort
of... I think that size of the Cooper pair in this approach is just the localization length.
Okay. I would like to return to my question about averaging. You know that in disordered system, choice of what to average is crucial. For example, if one calculates Hopping conductivity in a lightly doped semiconductor, one can average conductivity, one can average resistivity, and one can do percolation approach. And it's known that one averages conductivity, one gets terribly wrong answer, one averages resistivity, one gets terribly wrong answer, and only percolation works. Here you averaging something which looks like conductivity. And in disordered system, a priori, as an example I gave you, this is a wrong approach if you do this, at least not justified in any sense. So my question is, why you averaging conductivity, why not you averaging resistivity, and why aren't you using percolation approach?
Good. The answer is following. After, of course, I should check the accuracy of this approach, and we did it. How we did it is as follows. We derived a Ginzburg-Landau functional for the order parameter, smooth order parameter, which is defined in the following way. I want to answer you why I, look, Boris, why I decided to average like this, that's my private business, right? But I should check, no, this is my private business. But after I did it, I should show that it was reasonable. And this is what I'm trying to answer you. Why is it was reasonable? So, there is an order parameter. There is an order parameter which is obtained within this approximation which I described. I denote it as this delta V tilde. Now, actual order parameter is some fluctuating field, of course, and I parameterize it by multiplying my say mean field order parameter by some function psi. I assume that if this approach is reasonable, then this psi should be a relatively smooth function with relatively small fluctuations. How to check it? I should derive a free energy functional, free energy which depends on this psi of r. So this is what we did. We derived this functional f depending on this psi of r. It this functional is of usual Ginzburg-Landau type for a superconductive order parameter. And then we determine the all parameters which enter this functional, and eventually determine the fluctuational number, Ginzburg number, for this parameter, both thermal Ginzburg number and the one which characterized disorder fluctuations. The outcome of this calculation is that both these fluctuational parameters are of the order of unity. So, of course, we are not exact in this doing this calculation, but the error is of order one, not terrible error, like of order one, like in, say, in percolation theory.